This episode of the CMO Suite is brought to you by Uconix. Uconix provides digital solutions and teams to brand CMOs, VPs, and marketers looking for true transparency in the biddable media space. From paid social and PPC to complex platforms like the Trade Desk, brands from across the world have connected to Uconix. Visit them today at uconix.com. And No Kid Hungry. We're proud to promote No Kid Hungry and their many initiatives to help kids in need of meals. No Kid Hungry helps kids be kids, not be hungry. Visit them at nokidhungry.org. And finally, we're proud that Season 3 of the CMO Suite is presented by thecmocouncil.org as their official marketers podcast. The Chief Marketing Officer Council is the only global network of executives specifically dedicated to high-level knowledge exchange, thought leadership, and personal relationship building among senior corporate marketing leaders and brand decision makers. The CMO Council's 15,000-plus members control more than $550 billion in aggregated annual marketing expenditures and run complex distributed marketing and sales operations worldwide. For more information on membership, visit thecmocouncil.org. Let's start the show.
You're in the CMO Suite, the podcast for marketers who want to be in the know, presented by Connectivity Holdings.
You're listening to the CMO Suite presented by Connectivity Holdings. This is Sean Halter. I am incredibly excited today because my guest is Kim James. Kim is the Senior Director, Global Center of Excellence, Merchandising and Marketing at Circle K. How did I do that time?
That's a mouthful. You did well.
It is a mouthful. Have you done a podcast before?
I have, actually.
Ooh,
I have.
Really?
Not sexy like this one, but
oh, this one's kind
of
sexy.
A little more down and dirty. This was more like, you know, on a couch with a camera.
I think you just used the word sexy and down and dirty all like within... I don't even think I'm allowed to say that anymore. Am I blushing in here?
I'm a marketing girl,
says,
you know?
Says I'm blushing. Yeah, you are a marketing girl. That's fantastic. So you grew up in Florida, am I correct?
Well, I'm born and raised in Cleveland.
Okay, and so how old were you when you moved here?
13.
Okay, and so you remember Cleveland a bit, right?
I'm
from
it's
Cincinnati.
It's very cold there.
It is cold
there's
there.
There's a lot of snow. I didn't want to learn how to drive in snow. So I think that was, you know, my parents were like, let's get to Florida. I'm like, all right, that sounds good.
And so then where did you go to school you came here?
I went to high school in Tarpon Springs. I am a Sponger, proud and loud Sponger. And then I went to the University of Florida. I'm a Gator. And that's where I got my training up.
Sponges and Gators. It's all Florida analogies.
It's like
you know,
the
analogies.
Swamp water thing, yeah.
Talk about really your entry into marketing. Was that kind of the first job that you had, or did you have a few jobs kind of in between?
Yeah, no, I've been marketing.
How did you find your way?
I'm marketing since day one. So I think I got the love when I was in high school on the yearbook staff. This was the old days, right, when we cut out pictures and we did paste-ups and layouts, and you cut little letters out and you pasted them on the paper. That was your typesetting, right? I mean, I loved it. So I decided I wanted to be in advertising, and I chose a school that had an advertising major, not communications with a bend toward it. I wanted an advertising major, and University of Florida was there at the time. I had a couple choices, but I wanted to go there. And majored in advertising with an outside concentration in marketing. Focused a little bit on international marketing at the time. And when I got out of school, or when I was in school, actually, you know, their internships weren't a thing back then.
Back then, yeah.
Back then when we didn't have computers. And so there was an internship posted on a job board. And I took the little ticket, you know, gave them a call, and I got an internship with a drug company, drugstore company.
Did they give you free drugs as part
they
of
did
the
not.
Internship?
They did not.
Not
I
quite
think
as
I got
sexy
free water
as...
and ice.
What was the drug company?
Eckerd Drugstores.
Okay, so Eckerd, now... I'm going to sound like a complete idiot because I do live here in Florida. Eckerd got bought out, right?
Yeah.
And so it got bought out by CVS?
CVS and,
see, I'm not that
and Jean Coutu, which is a Canadian-based drugstore chain. And so it kind of split up. I left Eckerd when that happened, but I was there for about 10 years. And I interned for 2 years with them in 1989 and 1990. And that was kind of how I got born into the retail marketing space. And I haven't left. This is my, 29th year in retail marketing.
That's almost... insane in some ways.
Yeah, I was
isn't
two when I
marketer?
Started. I was really a prodigy.
Because your club age is 36,
right?
Yes. I don't know. I still use that. I turned 50 this year. I can't even say my club age is 39 anymore. I have to like cheat at 45 or 46
right?
or something.
Yeah.
So you've been in it, the whole thick of it.
I think you either love it or you hate it. The
and
retail
you must
side.
Love it because you've been in it.
I do. It's an adrenaline rush for me. You know, the pace and the excitement and things are always changing and the consumer certainly changes. So
The French company that you mentioned,
Jean Coutu.
You said it very Frenchly as well.
Well, I work for a Canadian C-store company, Alimentation Couche-Tard, and I also have to say that just perfect, right?
So yeah. It's, I know Cirque du Soleil. That's about as French as
that
I get.
Baguette, croissant?
Yes, and baguette, croissant. I have one of my best friends, his name is Michael, but we call him Frenchie. So from time to time, he tries to teach me French
words.
I think he tells me what they are, but they're probably something else entirely.
They came in handy. I lived in Luxembourg for 2 years, and it was largely French-speaking. And so you don't realize how much you actually know until you are thrust into the mix where you have to do it every day.
Is Luxembourg in Germany or in
Luxembourg's
Canada?
Luxembourg's its own country in Europe.
So as part of one of your jobs, mm-hmm. when you were with
Circle K
at the time,
mm-hmm. yeah.
you, my son is going to shoot me for wondering where Luxembourg
That's
even
okay.
is.
That's okay. Battle of the Bulge, that whole, like, Luxembourg's a little tiny country, about the size of Pinellas County, actually, in between Germany, Belgium, and France.
Well, I was close. I said Germany. You threw me off because you said it was a Canadian company, and I guess, again, I was forgetting you're global, so you were over there. And what were you doing when you were over there?
I was launching our global brand, so Circle K kind of reinvented ourselves about 4 years ago, kind of updated our image and our brand and what we stand for. And we are a company of acquisitions, right? So we have lots of different banners that we were flying, and we decided to bring them all under one, Circle K brand. So I worked on that project for a few years and then took it to Europe and launched those stores at Circle K and then U.S. and Canada as well.
How was that? You had never lived overseas before,
no.
I'm assuming.
I'm from Cleveland, remember?
That's right.
Yeah.
How was that? What
was
the impetus? What did they come to you and just say, hey, are you opening to go overseas for a couple years?
Yeah.
And you're like, you know what? Why not? What the heck?
No, never thought I'd have the opportunity. Again, just a girl from Cleveland. But we are a global company. We have opportunities to do jobs in different places. And as we launched the global brand and developed all of our trademarks and all of the logos and all of the brand materials, they said, we want this to sit in Europe for a while. And we launched Europe first and then the U.S.
Why did they pick Luxembourg? Any specific reason?
We have lots of businesses. There's lots of opportunity to combine our IP. So for our intellectual property from around the world. So we used some of the models in those countries to help us figure out how to set that up, which was really exciting because I'd never worked in that world before. Trademark attorneys are not my gig, but boy, did I learn a lot. So we used that as kind of a model to help us get things set up. We had our procurement team there. We had other functions there as well. And then I lived in Dublin for a little bit.
Dublin's beautiful, isn't it?
That was a lot more like the United States from the kind of people and the way they do business and the way life is there. So it was a grand adventure is what we call it.
How long did you live in Dublin?
In Dublin, a year.
So 2 years in Luxembourg and a year in Dublin.
Yeah, 3 years
total.
3 years
over there.
Mm-hmm.
Where else did you travel while you were over there?
We went to 25 countries in the 3 years that we were there. And I don't know how many cities. My husband and my son were with me. My daughter was in college over here. So she would come on breaks and visit. And we went everywhere we could. Definitely opens up your mind to what else is out there. Different styles of government, different styles of living, different cultures, different language. And it also makes coming home that much more sweet.
You know, one of the things we'd like to have on this show is just different people with some different titles, all that work in marketing. We try to have as many CMOs as we can each season. We throw a few VPs of marketing in there. But we also like to have different people that have just had different experiences. You know, I think when we started this show about 2.5 years ago, you know, from our perspective, we own an advertising agency, we own a digital marketing company, we own a creative group, or we have ownership stakes in those. Sometimes you feel like there's only one title that either you should be talking to or one title that does certain things, but you forget how vast this industry really is, even at that C level or even, you know, kind of close to that C level. There are so many people that have so many different and unique, whether it's job titles or just jobs themselves. Mm-hmm. It's great to be able to just get some perspective from different people as far as either what they do or how they, you know, landed in the space. Or even the interesting story that you just told, which is the fact that not only did you land in the space with a brand that a lot of us in the U.S. probably just think is American, but you forget, again, those global opportunities to be able to travel. And so that's always interesting. And it's great to be able to kind of hear those stories and know that you were able to come back home again.
Absolutely.
What do you feel like you took away from when you were there and you were kind of relaunching that brand? Mm-hmm. Were you relaunching Circle K itself? Was that the brand you were launching?
Replacing a brand.
Okay.
So
what was the brand you were replacing?
Statoil. Which was kind of the mothership, if you will, of fuel in Europe. And we purchased the C-store component of that organization and had the highest brand recognition in most of the countries in which we operated. Scary. So, which is why we had kind of a 2-year covert mission to build the foundation before we even launched. I mean, we had Q&A from all of the different stakeholders in the company, what they were concerned about changing the brand, what they might be concerned about, how to handle it from a public relations perspective. We're not even talking about consumers and pretty signs yet. We're just talking about managing the employee change.
What were you changing the name to?
Circle K.
Oh, so that's what it was. So you were moving from State
Stat Oil to Circle K.
Sorry, to Circle K.
Yeah. And they had never heard of Circle K before. And circle is an American word.
Oh, that's so funny.
Right. So you do all kinds of language vetting and testing to see if it even resonates, colors, merging logos together. So it was quite, it was a journey. It was a once in a career type of opportunity to build a brand from scratch and launch it.
What do you feel like you took away from that? If you had to kind of think of one big thing that was a...
We're not all that different.
Meaning U.S. and Europeans?
Mm-hmm. Customers, what people shop for, what a convenience store is here versus what a convenience store is there. People are in a hurry. People need a drink. They need tobacco. They need a candy bar. The candy bars might be different. I mean, I fell in love with a dime bar up in the Scandinavian countries. We got Snicker bars here. Doesn't matter where you are, it's a candy bar. So what I learned is that even though we had all these barriers and obstacles and challenges to figure out to launch a brand, a baby brand from scratch, enter a marketplace, the consumer really wasn't that different. We just needed to solve their need. They want to get in and out quick.
Solve, don't sell, right?
Yeah.
What an incredible opportunity.
It was pretty cool.
So then what brought you back?
I'd finished my stint and came back. And the organization came to me and said, hey, listen, we have an opportunity to level up our knowledge and experience in our organization in merchandising and marketing. And you have a lot of experience and you've done a lot of things. We want you to take that role and kind of improve our baseline, our folks, our processes, our practices, our training, our talent development, career pathing. And it's almost like a consultant to our own organization, right? Because you find the weak spots and then you figure out how to patch them and then you send people on their way to go do and make it happen. And so it's been pretty exciting. I've been able to apply all my knowledge in marketing and all my knowledge in merchandising and kind of put it together to lift the company performance.
And what are the areas that you feel like you've been able to focus on the most to be able to lift that performance?
I think our folks, looking at really our hiring practices, making sure we're onboarding people the right way. We're teaching them what the expectations are. This is our process. This is what we want you to do. The answers are going to be different. The results are going to be different. But we can all follow the same processes and give people a fair shot to have a good chance to do well in their position. I think that has been probably one of the biggest quick learnings in improving our employee engagement overall. I mean, we measure that every year. And our goal is to have people love their job and like coming into work every day and the people they work with and feel like they contribute and they're recognized. And we've been able to see some improvement in that area. So our results were pretty good to start with and we've been able to see improvement. So that's exciting.
And so is it still kind of considered with under the realm of marketing? And so is the elements that you're kind of implementing to be able to lift those pieces, are they all wrapped around marketing elements themselves?
Yeah, marketing and merchandising, right? The four P's don't die. Five P's, six P's, I don't care what you call it. It changes year by year. But it's about products. And do you have the right products? And do we have the right things on our shelves? And how do you figure out what's right for this store versus that store, Arizona versus Toronto versus Oslo? How do you, you know, price those products? What promotions are successful? How do you evaluate a successful promotion? What works? What doesn't? From a marketing perspective, you know, what's the media mix? You know, what do you need to think about? Who's your customer? Who are your segments? Who are your targets? What do they care about? Doesn't matter what Kim James thinks. Doesn't matter what you think. It matters what they think. So the coaching and training on those thought processes.
As you talk about, again, it doesn't really matter what we think to some extent. Certainly the world has become very flat to our point and extremely tied into to digital. You know, we talk about that. There's probably not a show that goes by that we don't say something that's related to digital to some extent. But I also feel like I'm getting a little bit of some push back in some ways from marketers that are we becoming too overly reliant upon data. And we're forgetting again that people are people, and sometimes you just have to roll up your sleeves, literally, and get in the field and figure out, you know, what's going on, as opposed to we've got, you know, 30 months of data and let's completely pivot and adjust from here. How do you feel like you are adapting to that, or how do you feel like Circle K is adapting around that to some extent?
Yeah, I guess kind of two things. One is I teach a 3-day class on category management, which is less about the process and more about our philosophies to everyone who joins our merchandising and marketing teams. And one of the things I remind them several times throughout the week is, it doesn't matter what you think or what I think, to your point, every meeting you're sitting in, you are the representative of our shopper or consumer or customer, whatever you want to call it, in that chair. And every decision we make has to go through that funnel, that lens. We're not serving what they need. Doesn't matter what any of the rest of the work we do is. You got to understand them. And I think sometimes we lose the customer, consumer, shopper in our thought process because we're looking at data so heavily. Let's think about what's driving that data. What is their purpose for showing up to the store to begin with or to buy the product or the service or whatever the case may be? And I think putting the customer center is probably kind of one of those back to basic things that we need to remind ourselves of. The other thing, I hear a lot of buzzwords. I hear fragmentation. I hear segmentation. You know, fragmentation is a very negative connotation. You know, it's about breaking things apart and splitting things up. Segmentation is about putting things into buckets separately. Mm-hmm. And people talk about media in that way, right?
Sure.
And I'm not sure that I'm fully bought into that. I believe in concepts of segmentation, understanding your targets in that way. But I think from how we talk to people, it's more about almost like a patchwork. It's almost more eclectic, if you will. Eclectic means to select. That's an old Greek word. And it was used...
You are schooling me now.
I'm sorry. So I'm a little geeky like this. So eclectic was used for Greek philosophers to describe them because they didn't buy into a particular thought or philosophy. They could pick and choose. Eclectic, right? And I kind of think that's our approach with a customer right now. One size does not fit all. And it's not broken apart. It's about us weaving the messages together and the touch points together, whether it's digital, loyalty, over-the-counter, in-store, brick-and-mortar, e-commerce. We have to stitch all of that together to provide a customer experience, a beneficial customer experience to them so they'll come back, right? So to me, I'm more about that patchwork kind of quilting things together. And we have way more levers and dials than we've ever had. Digital is a huge part of that. I think there's some place for traditional media in some places as well. And I think rolling your sleeves up and getting out and doing local marketing is really important also.
Well, to your point, you know, the reason why I feel like digital is getting pushed so much, again, is there's at least some measuring stick. Yep. And so for a CEO or a CFO who's got to sign off on a budget of a couple million dollars and whatever it is, they'd rather have some chart of some sort to be able to say that something is happening here. But at the same time, to your point, look, as much as we live on our phones and we all live on our phones, it's hard to build a brand with an ad that's sitting at the bottom of a piece of mobile. And that is the conversation we have with a lot of clients from time to time, which is you still need to get out there. People do still want to do business with brands they know, like, and trust. That hasn't changed.
Nope.
You got to get them to know you, but you still got to get them to like you, and you got to get them to trust you. Social can play, you know, some component from a like standpoint. Can certainly come to some extent from forms of digital media, but there's still plenty of space. You still got to be in your car. You're still driving by billboards to some extent. And if you're only relying upon PPC, or you're relying upon, dear Lord, Facebook or Instagram to make all your sales, you're gonna find again that they're not there to be your friend.
Yep.
You know, they're there to make money. They're there to squeeze you. Google's in the same spot. You know, and everybody's like, "Geez, why is my SEO not working as effectively as it used to?" That's for a reason. It's because they want you to pay for it. You know,
there's an invoice at the end.
Yeah. They don't want to let you know the secret sauce to rank high because they don't want you to rank high. They want you to pay for it. They don't want you to pay somebody else for it, which is why they don't, you know, release a lot of that stuff.
And I think that's equally as hard because you have all of these different platforms that you can use. Used to be, right? We had broadcast, print. About it, right?
Some radio.
TV radio, yeah.
You almost forgot radio for crying
out loud. Right? Crazy? Yeah. Right, here we are talking into microphones, yeah. Right? So it was easy for someone to say, we spent this much, we did this. Now you've got little bits of money going lots of different places, and folks that aren't comfortable in this space get really uncomfortable really quick, especially when you're at a C-level or a senior level and you're trying to figure out what the heck you're doing, and it's split, fragmented, segmented into many different ways. Instead of explaining it that way, I think it's more of the patchwork idea, right? So here's how we're getting our messages out to customers. It's all cohesive, hard to explain, really hard to explain.
Yeah, and the point that you just made, I think, is an important one, which again is that at the C level, it's hard sometimes to be able to say yes, but, or to have some faith, you know, for brands, especially in the you know, the C-store space or anything in this, you know, consumer packaged goods space. They've often not really had to market. They've had to have, you know, great presence on the shelf. Certainly they'd love some brand awareness if they can afford it, but shelf space to them was the most important commodity and everything else was kind of secondary. Mm-hmm. Now that, you know, my wife doesn't even walk into a grocery store anymore, they're having to learn marketing in ways they've never had to. They could buy a shelf talker, they could buy a couple of things, and that was kind of their marketing for the year, and then they could move on to something else. And so, you know, I feel like from our perspective, that creates opportunity. Because there are plenty of brands out there that are trying to figure out how to be consumer facing now that have never really had to have that level of touch and exposure. But to your point, at the same time, it can create its own share of why isn't this working? And you've run 20 days on a campaign, you have to let them know, you know, it's not like a light, it's not like a shelf talker. It's not a light switch. You can't just literally turn the switch on and consumers are going to give you that one-on-one interaction.
It's a little bit of everything. It's not one, no silver bullet. We have to bucket things together, and that's how we live our life, in pieces. And so there isn't one thing that you can do that will reach everyone and get the return that you want. So you got to break it up. And it's hard to explain. A lot of data goes into understanding it. But to your earlier point, at some point, you just got to roll your sleeves up and say, this makes common sense. This is working for our business. We're gonna bet on this.
What role do you think social media plays in the consumer packaged goods space at this point?
Oh, I think it's top of mind awareness, right? It's becoming part of the consideration set.
Do you think brands are using it incorrectly right now? Do you feel like, again, they're trying to use it as a sales tool in some ways?
Yes, absolutely.
And consumers don't want that. That's not really, unless you're selling shoes, right? I feel like that's one of the biggest struggles to try to help brands to understand, which is the importance of social media, certainly once you get into that CFO level or CEO level. And it's not unusual because sometimes that CFO or that CEO, he or she might be 50 or 60. They might have just gotten on Facebook, for crying out loud. So to help them to understand, look, on Instagram, you don't want to throw a bunch of ads. It needs to be able to kind of tell your story visually. And if you can, consumers will soak up that information. Again, for many, maybe in the space, they've never had to see what an actual sales funnel kind of look like to create engagement, to create brand awareness. They're just used to, again, the consumer walks in, they see us on a shelf and they buy us and they put us in their cart.
Yeah, it's an engagement with them and you can't be forced. They have to welcome it and you have to track what works and what doesn't. You can't just force a sales message to that audience. It's about creating that environment of a relationship. And to your point about brands, I do see some using it well. I follow a lot of them.
Who do you feel is using it well?
I think Target's doing a great job. I think Burger King's actually doing a pretty good job. Yeah, a little risky.
We had Fernando Machado on last season. He's awesome.
They're a little risky sometimes, but they're doing great things. And I think people follow them just to see what's going to be next. And I think that it's not about a sales pitch. It's about just, hey, we're part of your life. And this is where we connect. Like us if you want, don't like us if you want, but here we are. I think some are learning through that, how to make it work. But definitely it's a challenge. It's definitely a challenge. Some are doing it well. Some are investing in it. A lot of different things to see what sticks. And I think in this game, you got to try some things. If you're not trying and failing, you're probably not trying enough.
Well, as a CMO or a VP of marketing, again, no matter whether you're working with a massive brand or you're working with a small brand, that's the rub to some extent with social, which is helping the people above you. You're potentially putting a budget in there, a budget line for social, which is not always inexpensive. And you're trying to help them to understand, well, what are we going to get back out of that? And again, if you're not used to using a marketing funnel of some sort to help them, it's hard because they're going to want to push sales messages out because that's that one-on-one that they're looking for, that immediacy. But it's not hard to look through a bunch of brand feeds, and if it's all just ad, just, well, why would I?
Yeah.
It's content, right? Content is king. I feel like that content piece is the piece that will continue to build and grow, and it'll eventually get up a little closer to that top level for them to understand that social media is a piece of content, just like PR used to be, but it's incredibly important. And as opposed to maybe PR, where you had to kind of put it out and maybe hope or wish that consumers might be able to interact with it, social, you have the chance. It's literally
measure.
Right there.
Yeah, you can measure and decide which pieces of content work better than others. Video versus stagnant versus comment versus, there's lots of different ways to go about it. But it is hard. It's a hard thing. I have learned that in helping those audiences that may not be familiar with the platforms, customers' words are worth 1,000 words. So I have lots of slides as we're going through KPIs and measurables and deliverables to say, look, here's some posts from our customers and what they say. Here's some feedback. Here's some pictures. And those consumer engagement pieces really speak miles because it's real.
I feel like sometimes brands, again, maybe for all the reasons that we just talked about, they're not putting enough money into the part that you just said, which is understanding what's the consumer trying. Consumers will tell you what they want.
Yes, they will.
And there's a lot of brands that don't seem to ever even read their social media. They put a picture up. It sits there, gets a bunch of likes or a bunch of comments. Nobody on that team even takes either the time to read it, or if they do and they try to push it up, it doesn't necessarily seem to get up very high. And then they kind of wonder like, well, why didn't this new product that we rolled out sell? And meanwhile, if you look back through the last 3 months of people saying,
they told you,
we told you,
yep.
You can waste a lot of money that way.
You can waste a lot of money. You can lose a lot of loyalty from your customers if they're talking to you and you're not listening or even acknowledging. You can't do everything the customer asks. I mean, it's real, but at least acknowledging them goes a long way. You got to stay engaged. If you're going to be there, You have to be all in. You can't just put your toe in and think, oh, well, we're just going to throw this out there and see what happens. There are so many ways to test your messaging these days ahead of time, whether it's an online kind of focus group or even a mother-in-law focus group. You know, hey, A or B, you know.
You call that a mother-in-law focus group?
Yeah, just grabbing people. You know, okay, there's 30 people in the office today. Everybody, which one do you like, A or B? All right, you're more like our target customer. You're not. All right, which do you vote? I mean, you got to get some feedback because it's not just my opinion or that creative person's opinion. It's what the customer wants. And we rely a lot on testing our concepts, our strategies, our creative before we ever put it out in the stores or forward to the customers so that we make sure that we're not missing on a message.
I do see that part changing a little bit, which is good. I do see a lot of CEOs that do realize the importance of testing creative and understanding that their opinion that's one opinion.
Yeah.
You got to put it in a sea of people who you're actually trying to talk to. And so that is a way that some of this measurement has been helpful to be able to have some data to be able to put in front of, again, whether it's male or female or whatever at that C level and be able to say, yeah, but you know, you're not the target. I remember years ago where sometimes we'd have a client and they'd say, I'm not seeing my spots or I'm not hearing my spots on the radio. And I'd say, aren't we buying urban males in, in this part of the city? You're neither urban, you're not male and you don't live in that part of the city. If you're not hearing your ad, that's good.
Yeah.
We're doing something right.
Very specifically buying some spots on Animal Planet one time because one of my bosses, I just got tired and I'm like, you know what? Just buy a couple spots and we'll be done with it. Wrong thing to do, but that's an age old conversation.
That does still happen. We do, we do sometimes have some clients and they'll say, well, look, just put the billboard up because the distributor drives by that board every day. We want to make sure that they see us. Yeah. And sometimes that's also some internal selling.
Absolutely.
We've got a few minutes left. Again, thank you for joining us on the show. The time flies by sometimes pretty fast,
it does,
doesn't it?
Yeah. I can't believe we're almost over.
Has it been a little bit better than the one that you said on before?
Yeah. This is a little more higher level discussion, yeah.
Thank you very much. It may not have been sexy or it was maybe as sexy as you thought, but
no, this is fancy.
We did get to hear about Europe, which I'm always fascinated by that. Again, I think anytime you have somebody that can talk about whether there's differences or things that are the same, it's incredibly important for us to remember as marketers that, the brands can grow as well. What worked in Austin may not work in Akron. And if you're not careful, you're going to find that you're an only Austin brand and you've got nowhere to move from there.
Yeah, absolutely. As we get more global as well, the whole nother podcast about how to have a meeting in Scandinavia versus in Austin. That's a whole nother ball of wax. We could spend days.
We have an agency that uses our digital company. It's Saatchi & Saatchi, but the division that uses us is over in Europe. They're in India. And of course, the time zone is exactly different. We can only use Skype with them. Sometimes we try to explain to them this campaign that they're asking us to do won't work or don't send us this kind of campaign. They still send it to us and they still say, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Sean or whatever. And I'm just like, okay. All right. What am I supposed to do?
Yeah. It's a whole nother ball of wax when you're trying to move things in different cultures.
Do you think you'd ever end up back overseas or?
Maybe. I mean, my son's in high school right now, so probably not in the short term. But you never know when the call comes. I would highly encourage anyone who has the opportunity to grab it because there's no words to describe the benefit that comes from it.
What did your husband do while you guys were doing that?
He was my arm candy.
Nice.
Travel planner. Thank you. Travel planner, sun capturer when he was off and running, doing all these different sports and things. He kept things moving along, mostly travel planning. I mean, to get to 25 countries in 3 years and all, he was constantly figuring out where we were going next.
And that alone is a sacrifice for both of you.
Absolutely.
I'm sure for him, that probably felt like, wow, this is, my career or whatever his career is or was.
He was a high school football coach.
Is going to have to, take a back seat to some extent. So that, that takes its own share of saying, okay.
Yeah.
At the same time, what an incredible opportunity for dads who probably don't get those kinds of opportunities enough when your kids are at that age to still be working. And clearly he was working, with you, for you, whatever.
Yeah, absolutely.
However you count that over there. But to be able to step away enough to be able to just really experience your family in such a unique way, whether that's a husband or a wife, I feel like I don't hear that enough sometimes. You hear people who leave or take a couple years off to travel in their 20s. But, when you get in your 30s and 40s, it's harder.
It brings your relationship to a completely new level in a good way.
Mostly good,
I mean, there's
I hope.
There's some bad ways, too, but in good ways. And the family unit a lot closer together because you're all in it together. You're in a foreign place. You don't know how even to take the trash out or where to go get a post, how to mail a letter or, how to shop in the grocery store because it's all in French. And there's not a whole lot of expat dads over there. There's a lot of expat wives, but not so many expat dads. There were three in my son's school.
That's
three expat dads. So all of the clubs they have for not much, right? So you have to find your own path. So he did sacrifice a lot, but was the glue that stuck us all together because I was still traveling all over at that time too.
As you look at the next chapter in your career, you're back here in the States, you're working on this really interesting part of the project. Where do you feel like this industry is headed? Is it headed again in a direction that just becomes even more and more digital as we wrap our arms around that? Or does it take a little bit of a pause and kind of regroup, to your point, with kind of the spoke and the wheel piece?
I think it's both and. I don't think we're going to dodge digital. I mean, it is part of our life. It is part of our fabric. How digital will change as it relates to payment, as it relates to loyalty, as it relates to how we plan our lives and do our days. I think that's going to continue. But I do think there is a bit of a half a breath that's going to have to happen where we kind of get back to basics, put that consumer in the center, the shopper in the center, and figure out how best to connect with them. And it may be at the local soccer field back in the old days of local marketing and being out there with a poster and tickets for a free soda.
There's still something to be said for that hand-to-hand combat.
Still something. And I think that we'll have a pause check. There'll be a balance. It'll even out. But I don't think digital's going away.
Last question for you, which is who has inspired you? Obviously, again, you've taken a really interesting journey. It sounds as if you've taken a journey where you've made some very specific decisions about opportunities that were put in front of you that others might have either said no to or might have shied away from. And so who in your life has allowed you to kind of take that sense of, I'm just going to make a decision and I'm going to work with this decision the best way that I can. Who's either helped you with that or helped inspire you to kind of make those kinds of decisions in your life?
I would say twofold. I mean, my husband and my kids give me the reason to get up and make those decisions in the beginning of the day. So, I mean, they keep me fed. But I would say there's a 79-year-old guy who's still working and taught me three very important things. A firm handshake, the power of relationships. We're all salespeople. No matter what we're doing, you're selling a pitch, you're selling a concept, you're selling an idea in your organization to a customer, what have you. And the world is going to change faster and adapt faster than everybody else, and you'll get ahead.
And who is that?
It's my dad.
Oh, well, that's an amazing way to wrap. Our dads are incredibly important to all of us. My dad was one of the best salespeople I'd ever met, which is what kept me from wanting to go into sales for so long, because he was just so good and amazing. And that's what great advice, and it's advice obviously you've lived your life by. So Kim, thank you so much for joining us on the show. Listen, if you want to find out more about Kim James, it's simple. Just stalk her on LinkedIn, which is exactly what I've done pretty consistently. Find somebody who's connected to her, as I did with my buddy Ari Rothman over there. And if you want to find out more about us, it's pretty simple. Just go to the CMOsuite.com. We want to thank you again for joining us on the show. How was that?
It was fantastic. My pleasure.
Awesome. Thank you very much. Take us out of the show.
Thanks for hanging out in the CMO Suite. Podcast for marketers who want to be in the know, presented by Connectivity Holdings.
You're a C-level manager. You shouldn't have to know the difference between behavioral or contextual targeting, but your agency should. Uconnex provides brands and biddable teams direct access to platforms like The Trade Desk, Google, Amazon, Facebook, OTT, and more. Their U.S.-based traders can train your in-house team or provide complete transparency with no minimums and CPM-based service pricing for true transparency. Something Mighty Hive, The Trade Desk, and Centro simply don't offer. Tired of being the smartest one in the room? Reach out to Uconnex today for a free demo. Uconnex, the world's leader in true, transparent, biddable media.